You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with another guest episode here for the Business Broker Growth Show. I have with me Daniel Brainard. He is the owner of Next Step Capital. Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, man. I'm so happy to be here. I appreciate it.
I know we're going to have a blast. I say this about most all of my guests. In this case here, it's taken us a while to even just hit record today because we were chatting about things like pickleball, croquet, disc golf. I should have just hit record. We should have just made that the episode. So I know it's going to be fun. The times that we've spoken, a lot of different things coming up have come up in the conversation. So for people tuning in, the goal of this is to talk to Daniel, the business broker. But I know some life stuff's going to come up. He and I reference in our conversation with the other people like Alex Hormozi and stuff like that. So, be prepared for a lot of interesting things to come up. And we're going to dive into it right away. You know, I'm not big on super scripted intros from my side. You were in real estate. You got into FedEx, essentially. It's not franchises, but owning some FedEx territories. Did that for a while, grew that, and then, you know, got into business brokerage. So let's talk about, like, where did you start? Like, if you think about, like, the evolution of Daniel to here, to this moment in your life, obviously a lot of seasons to come, but like, what were the milestones that got to here where you go, I can be really helpful as a business broker because of what I've done?
Yeah. The 60 or 90 second kind of short version of entrepreneurship, because that's where it started for me. It was owning sales, owning kind of some back and forth across all that was, At 15, 16 years old, my dad made the same offer to me that he made to all of my brothers, which is, I'll co-sign for the mower if you'll start a lawn care business. And so, worst case, we needed a mower anyways for our farm. He was, you know, the benefit of having a bunch of sons is we'll help with that. And so he co-signed the zero turn. I had 2 yards day one, and by a year and a half later, I was probably out earning most of my teachers in high school, in the lawn care industry, and no dig at them. It's just how blessed we were. And that, several years at that turned into a residential real estate license, that turned into a broker's license, multifamily properties, you know, class D stuff, nothing crazy. And then a couple small businesses that we had at the time were great, lost them due to COVID, took all of what we had left, and my business partner went one way in construction. I went another way into logistics, and kind of always doing residential sales on and off. Like if we had a slow season, I could pick up some houses, and then jumped into FedEx logistics contracting, got to enjoy that for several years. And then my partners offered me a buyout that, you know, I really liked. And, you know, Warren Buffett says it really well. We sell high, we buy low, and we sell high, and we did both. And so during the end of me being as a FedEx contractor, we had started building out the brokerage. And I told my partners that I wanted to keep that piece. And, you know, we hadn't started it yet. We were just kind of working on it. So they said, you know, that it doesn't exist. You can have it, you know, the $0 of revenue that arm brings in. And so I came out of that, took a little bit of time off just to enjoy some life and catch my breath while simultaneously building the business brokerage on the back end. So 15 years old to 30 years old, that's what gets us here. And then now a couple of years into brokering.
What was that like with the FedEx? Because it's one of those things where I didn't know a lot about this until recently. And I find it fascinating to think that, you know, it's essentially a franchise. I don't know what it falls under. That's my ignorance. But I think it's interesting to think of like buying FedEx contracts. And so what was that like? What's involved with growing that? What's it like running that?
Yeah. they won't let you use the word franchise. Because there's not like a licensing model. It's genuine contract to contract. So the assets, I mean, I'm like first grade level of this because it gets real in the weeds and we could spend 2 hours just on FedEx. But the high level of it is it's contracts and trucks. And so, and then it's systems of operations, as would any business be. And so to get into it, and we got in years and years ago, so it was a little bit easier in my opinion than it is now, because they're going through what they call like network 2.0. AI is becoming a bigger player, all those things. So once you're in it, the way I describe it to clients is like, it's like sitting at the cool kids lunch table. Like you get to know all the secrets and all the things and hear the gossip, but to get into it, it's kind of hard to track down reliable information. And so one of the things we work on is both the brokering side, but also the education side from a acquisition standpoint to an operating standpoint. It's just helping people understand why this world exists, why people know very little about it. And everything comes from just personal experience, because that's all I have. It's, you know, what we did and how we did. And then basic business operations, you know, when you see enough of these things and you see, hey, this thing over here on the left works, this thing over here on the right doesn't, 9 out of 10 times, we can advise people that way and say, this is why we're seeing this one being more or less successful. You asked 2 or 3 questions there and I lost the first
part of it. I think that's interesting. And it's interesting the difference between contract and franchise, franchise being something where it's a licensing, you're running it, here's the playbook, but you're doing it, you're under our brand, but you're also running it, versus the contracts and the trucks. Like when you think about that, because now I'm curious, because, you know, doing brokerage, you're helping business owners buy. And then, you know, there's the buy and the sell side, you know, that you're dealing with these transactions. What did you learn from that of running it? You said there's, you know, the business operations are about the same, the rules, right, for running a successful business. Like what kind of things stand out from that type of operation versus, let's say, the lawn care or the real estate experience that you had?
Yeah. Employees, you know, was a big factor. Didn't have too many of those when we were in lawn care. We had a bunch of little businesses, probably across my cousin and myself's network of businesses, people, things going on, maybe like 10 or 15, all kind of lower level stuff. Like nobody was on salary for 80,000 bucks a year, 100 grand a year, or something like that. So, comparatively, and when we're educating these guys, like that's what we go through, because they have to be approved by FedEx to purchase. They want somebody competent to essentially, and you have to watch the language here, because you're not acquiring the contract from FedEx, but they are approving that you can competently come in and basically contract for them. And so it's, I mean, if there's a line of, you know, franchise, it sits right there next to the fence and just hangs out. But for, you know, for me coming in, because I bought in relatively young compared to most contractors, you know, most of these guys are like cashing out home equity or, you know, retirement accounts, things like that to get in. Not many 20-ish year olds, 25 year olds are hopping into this space. A couple, I sold one to a 23 year old guy. He's awesome. But you're learning truly how to run what I would call like small business America. When you hear of a small business, you're thinking, you know, $500,000 to probably, they say up to 5 million, but even 2 or 3 million is a lot of these FedEx businesses. You're getting to see what that average business owner looks like. They're making 10, 15, 20% profit margins, depending on before or after their personal salary. Some guys, their entire profit margin is their salary. And then you're getting to deal with some assets. You're getting to deal with, you know, those trucks have to run for you to make money. Your drivers have to show up to work. You have contractual obligations. Now with Network 2.0, you have like timestamp deliveries we have to be on time for. So there's logistics. I mean, not to be like funny, but there's true logistics involved to running a logistics business. And there's where I say it's its own world is like there are insurance guys specific to FedEx. There are GPS systems specific to FedEx. Now when they can, they probably have a few other clients like myself. You know, we broker some deals outside of FedEx. We're not, you know, solely in that space, but probably 90% of their revenue is coming from just one area or one source. And so it's real interesting to have stepped in and seen that you're dealing with, you know, the day I bought it, I'm introduced to a 60-year-old manager who's been doing it for 12 years. So he, in a great way, assumed he knew everything. I assumed I knew everything. You know, you got drivers who have been running this same truck and same route and same boxes for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So it's very different from like the lawn care I built from scratch. You know, I was just word of mouth, this and that. You know, this is day one revenue. You know, within 14 days, we're getting a paycheck and it's sizable. You know, a lot of it goes back out the door to run the business, but it's a sizable check. And so it was so very different because at our largest in the FedEx space, we did, I don't know the exact number. One day somebody's going to call me on it and I'll probably be a little bit off. So I range it. We did like 12.5 to 13.5 million, I think, in total gross revenue at our largest. 130-ish employees, 140 seasonal. So, you know, 100 to 150, I average it like 120, 130. So, you know, your payroll's $100,000 a week plus. And so it was also really different when I stepped into that space. I think I finally understood from an entrepreneur side, not the broker side, but from an entrepreneur operator, the kind of the weirdness behind money, you know, cause used to, you hear people be like, oh, $100,000's not a lot. And it's like, well, when you send that out in payroll every week, it changes your perspective on $100,000. when your fuel bill is 20-30,000 bucks a week, it changes your perspective. And not all the contracts are that size. That was our total portfolio of companies, but it just changes things. You know, you blow a transmission, you know, a few days in and you're charging the credit card for 6,000 bucks. You just bought the business 2 weeks ago, you know, however long you've been in it. So it was cool to see it from that perspective, you know, from understanding like what you hear all these guys talking about, like money and things, and you don't quite understand it when you have a lawn care company doing 100,000 bucks a year, but you have a logistics business doing, you know, one arm is doing 2 million, one arm's doing 4 million, one arm's doing 6 million. I mean, you know, you've got different arms of the company that are doing millions of dollars in revenue. And it just changed my perspective of money at 25 years old.
And, so, and were there many of those like, oh crap, what did we get ourselves into, transmissions breaking and other things happening early on? Or did that kind of go with the flow of it?
Yeah, it probably immediately, because like, but in a good way, like it didn't scare me off. Cause I mean, you know, we'd done our research. I'd been looking at FedEx for years. We had already had some of that stuff, like in apartment buildings and stuff. You know, my cousin would call me and say, hey, the septic system went out. We can do it ourselves, which we don't really know how to do, for $4,000 or $5,000, or we can hire it out for 12 or 15. I'm like, well, we don't have either of those amounts in our bank account. So I guess the four, because that one's easier to figure out. You know, so we'd already had some of those like, oh, dang moments. Go ahead. What were you saying? Yeah. I thought you were saying something. So, you know, in the FedEx space, like we had those pretty quickly. You know, a transmission drops out, or you buy the company and assume everybody's going to stick around. And like 2 days in, some guy's like, hey, I got a better offer three, you know, contracts over, or, hey, he offered me a pay raise. If you don't honor that, I'm leaving. And I'm like, I didn't know about that pay raise. Even if he did tell me, it probably wasn't at the top of my list when we're signing a note with the bank for $1 million, you know, so it's $20 pay raise is not a huge ordeal to me in that moment. And so there were some shell shock moments there. But I play it pretty safe financially when I can, compared to like a lot of contractors. I make a joke to every buyer that I meet. I'm like, do not go in day one and buy a brand new vehicle. Like, I don't know why, but it's like the second you start seeing you're getting 30, 40, 50,000 bucks a week into your account, mind you, 80%+ of that's heading right back out the door. They automatically assume I can buy a Cybertruck, or I can buy a, you know, a Mercedes or something. And I'm like, give it one tax return, you know, wait for one corporate filing. And so, you know, we had some seed money to, or some operating capital. We had a few things set up to where, like, and we were, like I said, we partnered, I had some business partners. So we kind of knew what we were getting into. It wasn't as scary.
Yeah.
We bought right before what they call peak season. So just the holidays. And that was probably the biggest shell shock, was the volume nearly doubles overnight. Like Black Friday hits and volume doubles for the next 6 weeks. And, you know, so had we gotten in months prior and kind of known what was coming, that would have been better. But we got in 2 weeks before, and it was just 100 miles an hour from day one. And my dad, I have several mentors, my dad being one of them, because he's been a business owner for a majority of his career. And I called him and I was like, I mean, like, Dad, we just got this, and I feel like I'm going to lose it. And he said, well, just eat the elephant one bite at a time. He said, put your head down. Like, this isn't the first time we've done this. Like, work through it. You'll be fine. And get creative. And so we did. You know, we called some of the best drivers we had. We had gotten behind like almost half a day's worth of work. And in holiday season, you know, with shoppers and Amazon, I mean, you just can't do that. And so I called some of my best drivers and I said, okay, I'll give you X amount above the standard for X amount of work being done above the standard. And so, sure enough, within like 36 hours, we caught right back up, and it was just getting creative and saying, okay, this isn't going to be a very profitable 2 days, but I can sacrifice 2 days against 365 and be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
When you can forecast that way, it's not as terrifying.
Yeah. And it's interesting hearing you talk about the different things. And I love your comment about give it one tax return, I think, for everybody. It's interesting, you know, you see salespeople like that, where they make some money in sales, and then they buy a bunch of stuff, and they don't play the long game. And I can see that with business owners too, and somebody buying a business that's already existing. And part of why I was asking too about your experience in there, because obviously you made it through, you successfully sold off your part, and you're doing what you do now as a broker, which is where this segues into. Because I think of, like, listening to you talk and hearing those stories, and then thinking about buyers that buy a business, hopefully through a broker, but when they buy a business, and again, like you said, you're hoping or assuming all the employees are going to stay on board. You're assuming and hoping everything is working like it was working yesterday, right? It's like nothing like buying a house or something like that, where you bought it, it was inspected, it seemed to work, and then shortly after, things, you know, stopped working. And so how does that shape what you do now as a business broker when you're part of these transactions? Because obviously your responsibility is probably to the seller, right? Like on the listing side. But how do you also, other than the tax return comment, prepare buyers and or sellers, like, on, you know, the post close, I guess?
So especially if there's like seller, there's so many ways to attack that, especially if there's like seller financing involved, we want them to be successful. And so I'm very transparent with my sellers, in the sense of, A, we're not hiding anything in the weeds. You know, if there's something going on, I promise you, just from, and you know, and I'm a Christian, I have a faith, I have, you know, morals in that world. And I got somebody, you know, larger than life to answer to every night. I want to be able to go to sleep, and sleep well. And so beyond that, you know, and the integrity of it all, I'm like, it's going to come out. You can hide it. Maybe you get away with it for a couple years, but like, you start playing with big boy contracts and, you know, big boy things, it's mildly terrifying to think that you're trying to manipulate or hide or something like that. So I prep my sellers on one end. There, as you know, there's little to no buyer representation outside of banks, attorneys, you know, people helping in that space. And so because we do some of the education stuff, and something we're rolling out right now is, like, especially for FedEx specifically, is some low cost, high volume education so that they know what they're getting into. Cause I think it's terrifying. I don't care if you're buying a car wash, a FedEx contract, or a hotel, you should probably do some mild education before getting into it, you know? And we have guys that you almost feel like they just decided one day I want to buy this. And I would prefer they spend like 6 months thinking about it or prepping themselves. Cause I, you know, it's like shiny object syndrome. Like I want that. It looks great. And I'm like, go spend a month or two studying it. I don't think you need to go like work in the contract itself, but go look at podcasts, YouTube videos, conferences, like whatever. And, you know, it's the same thing on like your financial books, like spend a few bucks with a CPA and run through them. We advise all of our clients, like legally have a lawyer look through this, and then financially, not their CPA, your CPA. Have somebody that you know and trust that you've paid money to before and say, hey, just give me your honest feedback on this. What's that going to cost you? $500? $1,000? You're spending $1 million. Mm-hmm. To complain about $1,000, yes, it's a lot of money, but it's kind of a dumb comment. You know, that's like saying I had to spend gas money to go get coffee. And it's like, okay, it's a fun statement, but I don't know what you want me to do with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that we try and help with as well, is just pointing that out, because they have to clear FedEx. They have to, you know, if I'm selling like a CPA firm, I don't have to do half of this stuff. But if I'm selling a FedEx contract, I have to help them interview with FedEx and clear that side of it as the buyer. Hmm. And understand what they're going to be walking into, because FedEx wants to know that you can competently run a business and that you can competently answer basic things about the contract. And so it's kind of a full team effort between seller, buyer, and myself to say, hey, do you feel, you know, prepared in stepping into this? Because it's also possible in the FedEx space that you can lose your contract entirely. And so now it's few and far between. I know people on Facebook would say it's every other day and every single one of them, but it's not. Many people successfully enter and then exit. But it, you know, I use this analogy a lot with people, and some people laugh and some people hate it. But I'm like, you know, imagine if you bought a car wash and you never paid the water bill and you never put soap inside of the big massive dispensers to wash your car. You would have a very unsuccessful car wash. So if you're not putting money and resources back into your FedEx business, please don't be surprised 6 months or a year or 2 years or 5 years from now when it fails. And if you're buying that Tesla Cybertruck instead of upgrading, you know, a truck in your fleet, you made a personal choice. Because any outside of FedEx, any entrepreneur knows, and I think Dave Ramsey said it really well, especially during COVID. He was like, if for some reason we run out of money or revenue drops significantly, I lose first, the board loses second, all the C-suite and all of them are third, the last people we're taking money from is the employees. Now we may have to, but it's the last option on the table. And
yeah,
a lot of small business America, that, you know, 500K to 5 million mark, or, you know, even sub 500K, I see a lot of people try and take first, and it's debated widely. Like, do you take first so that you're taken care of and you can function the business well, or do you give the business everything you possibly can, and then you take last so that if one has to survive, it's the business. Obviously you would survive too, you know, but you might be on beans and rice and, you know, driving a jalopy or something. So
that is a tough one, right? Because if you think of, yeah, like, you know, using the Ramsey example, I think, you know, he and others say, like, you know, pay yourself first, right? On a personal side, right? Put your money, yeah, in savings first and then pay the rest of your bills, which always sounds good in theory if you have that, yeah, if it's in your budget,
extra, right,
to be, yeah, able to do that. And yeah, so, like, and then there's the principle of, you know, putting your mask on first before anyone else, because if you don't make it, it's not going to matter at all.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is an interesting concept to think of. Like, do you pay yourself first? Do you not pay yourself? Who, you know, what do you do? And, you know, ideally you just pay everybody, but that's not how it always goes.
I think, and my response like to my own, you know, theory there is, I think we lose sight of what taking care of us first really means. As business owners, from an entrepreneur, from a broker perspective, from all of it, like I can look at it so many ways. And I use myself as an example all the time. Cause like we, don't get me wrong, we have some very nice things. We, you know, as we said at the intro, we're talking about custom croquet mallets at one point, you know, I don't have one yet. It's on the list though, but,
on the list coming soon,
but yeah. Oh yeah. I'll send you a picture when we get it. But there's just a level to it to me. You know, I could, the day I sold my company, I looked at, like I said, I love using myself as an example. I looked at brand new Raptor R's. I wanted a brand new
good choice
Ford Raptor R. I thought so. And even though, you know, I had nothing else going on and could have casually bought it, $140,000 to me at that age, at that time, just felt gross. Like I just didn't love it. And on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, and I don't mind, I'll say this proudly, because we do have other nice vehicles, but the one I drive that I bought for me is a gas F-250 with a flatbed on it. And I use it as a farm truck, because if I'm not doing this, I am farming or hunting. And it cost $12,000-$13,000. And it's the complete other end of the spectrum of a, you know, brand new Raptor R, $130,000-$140,000. And so I use that example to say, like, I took care of myself in either scenario. I needed a vehicle. It did not have to be the overly expensive one. And so when we're choosing in our business, and something I've debated with business owners for a long time is, it's like, you know, same thing we saw in residential sales. We always push the narrative. If you're approved for a $500,000 house, you go shop 450 to 550 is the first thing you put into Zillow. You don't even look at $300,000 houses or $200,000 houses to see if one fits your need. And we do the same thing in business. You know, we're bringing in $10,000 extra dollars a month. And it's like, yeah, for 3 months, once again, let it rotate one tax return. Is that 3 months out of the year or 12 months out of the year? Does it go up or down? Do you need the first 6 months to pay for the last 6 months, or vice versa? You know, and some of these guys just don't know that. And now I've met contractors that have been in for 15 years and they have brand new, nice things. And, you know, but they know the cycle of their business.
Correct.
And so, you know, I look at all of that and I'm like, that guy could much more easily answer the, who do you take care of first? Well, he's already taken care of both and wavered enough cycles to know what that's supposed to look like. But I would argue, like, pour the money back into the business or into, you know, Alex, I think, calls it the war chest, because you don't know what's coming.
Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts, and in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember, you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
I would argue, like, pour the money back into the business or into, you know, Alex, I think, calls it the war chest, because you don't know what's coming.
You don't know what's coming. And if we think about it, right, like that, the contractor example, you're saying they've done it for 12, 15 years. This is the difference between someone who's been running the business to a point where it's successful enough to sell. Because there's people who've been running a business for a long time and it's not sellable, or it's not going to get them what they want. But if you think of like the 10,000 hours principle, then you think of, like, how many hours it takes to become an expert or something. Somebody who's done, that's a FedEx contracting for 12 to 15 years, they've seen it all and they've been through the cycles, the economy, the staff. They've seen enough things where they know how to handle it. They know how to plan ahead. They know how to adjust. And so they get it. But that's the difference between somebody who buys it and then it's like, oh, this has been a good first 6 months. Like this is easy. It's like, you have no idea, right? Short of another pandemic, you have no idea what's going to happen. You know, if you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it. That's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode. They've seen enough things where they know how to handle it. They know how to plan ahead. They know how to adjust. And so they get it. But that's the difference between somebody who buys it and then it's like, oh, this has been a good first 6 months. Like this is easy. It's like, you have no idea, right? Short of another pandemic, you have no idea what's going to happen, you know, cyclically.
And the last pandemic favored some contractors because everybody stayed at home and ordered everything.
It's true.
Not to say that, you know, obviously that kind of makes sense that it could, you know, if it happened again, that's what would happen. But you just don't know that. That's like asking if Bitcoin's going to go to 1 million or zero. I have no clue.
No idea.
And you can say, oh, I know it will. But like you don't. There's no actual evidence to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt. And it's the same thing of running a business. And so that's why I try and reference like Ramsey and some of that to these people is I'm like, before you start buying yourself nicer houses and nicer toys, especially if you just financed $500,000, million, $2 million bucks, maybe pay some of that down. Like get yourself ahead a year or two. I mean, there's still basic financing options. If you're running a $3 million a year business, your account should have more than 10 grand in it at any given time. it should have a couple six figures in it, in my opinion, you know, because you're probably, you and the banker are going to have each other's cell phone number because of how often you're hitting the negative statement, or the not, was it non-sufficient funds?
Insufficient funds. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just, to me, it's like, hey, get to a level where if something were to happen, you could breathe. Like we had a truck, cause we were in the semi space as well. For example, we had, a semi slam into another semi and we were the one who caused it. And I think within 48 hours, we had to wire out like 75,000 bucks. That was what we had to send out almost immediately. Because they're losing money and we're losing money for not one, but two tractors to be off the road. And I don't remember how all that shook out because that part wasn't my piece of the business, but I know I got to be a part of the one to sign off on us wiring that out. And that super sucked. You know, so you look in, you know, you look in your personal account, you say, hey, honey, we have $5,000, but we have a $2,000 mortgage. You don't, you have three. Mm-hmm. And if you look in your business account and you say, we have 100,000 bucks, but you have 50 or 70 that cycle for operations almost always, you don't have 100, you have 30, maybe 50. And so it changes the perspective of how you're thinking of those things and all that back to like my experience in FedEx and operations, like that was the stuff I was seeing and learning during those times was, you know, 100 grand in the bank account is not 100 grand. Not even close. It's 100 grand. It's like having a great hammer or a shovel. It's a great tool to use. You don't actually get to like enjoy that though. That's for work only.
So with your business broker, so going to that a little bit and, mm-hmm. and all of this is still tied in there. So to confirm, your niche focus is on brokering FedEx contracts, right?
Yeah. A lot of it is, especially for like this season, our current plan and what we're deploying is moving into just, you know, the blue collar, you know, more of that, like CPA firms, plumbing, roofing, you know, any kind of industry, you know, car washes, hotels, eventually stuff like that. So we're expanding cause I don't want to be tied to just one niche market. I just don't think that's a good strategy in my opinion. But yeah, right now, 9 out of 10 deals we do are going to be in the FedEx or logistics space.
Got it. And one of the things you did too is you have your business brokerage, but it's under EXP, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we are. Okay. Depending on who's saying it or how you're saying it, it doesn't matter to me, but it's, you know, brokered by, powered by, partnered with. But yeah, we run under the EXP commercial brand.
Now, why did you do that? Why was that important to you?
Part of it was I'd already had my residential real estate license with them, and there's a lot of positivity to their business setup and their business model. Like revenue share, things like that with, you know, other agents. I liked that piece of it from a residential side years ago. And then from a commercial side, we've got interstate co-op agreements where I'm good to some level. I don't want to get in trouble saying this, but like the ease of the conversation is I can basically do deals in all 50 states legally. And 20 something countries. Now, the side note there is there's probably a document, a person, or a process that has to take place for me to do a deal there.
Sure.
And it may not be my name on the contract. Like in California, Lord, I hope I say this right. If not, you know, forgive me. But I think if I remember correctly, because we've only done one out there, I basically get a referral fee, but I get to be a part of the deal the entire time. Because in something as niche as the FedEx space, they don't really want to talk to somebody who doesn't understand them. Like most blue collar guys, they just see a greasy salesman. And so when I can say, hey, I've done this, I understand the world, we can have a little easier conversation. They don't want me to just hand that off to some random person in California. And the lady I partner with in California is absolutely awesome. Super, super rock star. Agent and attorney. And so we're able to do deals, you know, in some of the hardest states. And it's just a document, a verbiage change, and a process that allows us to do deals there. And so we can truly represent clients and check all the boxes. And I'm not saying other brokers don't, but like, I know I'm good in the state I'm doing the deal in. For however we have to set that up, I know I'm good there. And so I liked that EXP allowed me to be able to do that without me having to constantly go figure out, did Idaho change their laws? Did New Jersey switch up what they're doing? Is New Mexico a physical turf co-op? Like what kind of state are they in the terms of business brokering? And so it's been fun to partner with them and kind of, I actually get to be in the weeds a little bit with them on figuring out some of this because it's just different, you know, in the space of commercial. Most people, they, you know, if they're in commercial at EXP, they're in like Dallas, Texas, and they're doing, you know, square foot leasing and industrial complexes, apartment buildings. So business brokering is its own world inside of the world of commercial anywhere. And to be able to be a part of that at EXP is really fun to kind of help figure things out. I probably caused some noise that they laugh about up at the top of like, who is this kid asking all these questions? But it opened a lot of doors for me confidently. And I think that's what I like the most about it.
No, and I think it's great. And I know that you're wanting to evolve and grow beyond just the FedEx contracts and the FedEx deals, but I could see where the value of a, you know, nationwide international like coverage and support would be valuable. Like if you were just doing deals in your home state and, you know, maybe if something else came up in another state that's, you know, doesn't have licensing requirements, maybe that's easy or you just, you know, co-broker, you know, list something. But for what that part with the FedEx, it makes sense where it's like, essentially you can be a part in some way of a deal because it is, you know, again, I've always joked about this, like each business owner thinks that their business and their industry is so different than everyone else. Like unless you've done it, you can't understand it, which that's not true for most of it because business is business, but there are some aspects of every industry where it's like, there's a different language, there's different requirements, there's different rules of the game and a FedEx contract versus a car wash, like you said, versus, and a, it, you know, that,
I,
those.
I like with EXP, like getting to talk, cause I, you know, for me to do a deal out in Arkansas, I have to call the state broker for Arkansas, who also happens to be the state broker via EXP for two or three other states. And they have their own niche. And so when I call and say, hey, I'm Daniel, I'm in Kentucky, I'm trying to do a FedEx deal in Arkansas for $1.5 million, blah, blah, blah. Their first response is, what the heck is a FedEx deal? You know, or something like that. And then secondly, we get to talk through like what their niche is. And so I've gotten to meet, you know, a guy that his niche is massive hotels. You know, I'm not talking like mom and pop, you know, $1 million sales. I'm talking like $8, $10, $15 million deals each. And so what I liked about that for me is, because I'm a young guy, my career here is allowed to be decades, Lord willing, I lived that long and I'm, you know, decent at it. And I like that it opened the door for me to talk with him. And I'm a huge relationship person in that aspect. And he said, well, dude, if you ever have a hotel deal, just give me a call. There's enough meat on the bone. We'll both be fine. And so if somebody were to call me and say, hey, I've got a $3 million, $4, $5, $6 million hotel deal I want to do, or motel deal I want to do, I can confidently list that with him. There's enough meat on the bone for both of us. And I don't have to feel like I'm figuring out an entire different side of the industry by myself. Yeah. I don't have to worry about like, cause you know, when you cut your teeth on enough deals, like residentially, you know that there's stuff you're going to overlook because this house and this neighborhood is different from this house and this neighborhood. And you should have asked for that. And so now going into it, like, I don't know much about the medical world and the tech world with business brokering, but that's where some of the largest M&A deals are going to be done. And we have people that specialize in that.
Yeah.
So even from a referral perspective, it's worth the money and the time to know and have those connections.
And it's always that interesting balance, right? Between being really good at a niche, but then like also what other deals come up, right? It's like you marry one or you're good in that, but you also know how to partner with others as those come up. If it's something that's just of a large size or a different scope or a different industry, we're like, do I want to put everyone through me learning the specifics? Like you said, the residential real estate kind of comparison. It's like once you've sold enough houses and condos and farmland or whatever, like then you've seen enough, but how many at bats does it really take before you understand, oh, this house is on septic and a well versus city water and this, and then, you know, in an HOA, it's like, you know, how many cycles do you have to go through versus how do you just bring in that person, which I love that that's the focus. And I think it goes to what's also interesting, because you and I talked about this previously as well, which is where, like with real estate agents, generally there's a level of trust because there's licensing that's required for them to do real estate things. And then there's business brokerage where 17 states, you have to have a real estate license, which isn't really valid, but most states you don't. And then where is there not that level of trust, right? And then it feels salesy or feels weird for people, right? Like,
and
like what's your perspective on that?
Well, and I may be jumping ahead on a question you might ask me later, but like for me, it comes, and it's something that like I just hired an assistant to help me with this because I just don't have the time for it, is like brand recognition and marketing. You know, and I love like Gary Vaynerchuk for all of that. And I think that's where we're headed for the real estate agents who are going to be successful, the business brokers who are going to be successful, the podcasters who are going to be successful, because like we're working on one for us that, you know, we're going to return the favor and get to chat with you at some point, is they're going to integrate, build a brand. And then, you know, if I say certain names in certain industries, it will click. Or if you do a mild search on social media, you'll understand immediately like, oh, because they have 50,000 followers or 200, you know. So for us, it's building all of that so that that friendly neighborhood realtor, I hate the word vibe, but that friendly neighborhood realtor vibe is also there with somebody like a business broker. You know, eventually it's not just going to be me that's handling all the calls and doing all the sales and stuff. But if you call into the Dave Ramsey show, you feel okay getting advice from one of the personalities, and it doesn't have to be Dave anymore. And so I feel that same way on, if I can build a firm, a group, a team, whatever you want to call it, under EXP, you know, A, we're tied to a nationally respected brand, internationally respected brand and company, one of the, you know, pretty much the fastest growing cloud brokerage that there is, and the highest performing. Beyond that, you have myself and some others that are going to be deeply rooted in certain niche markets. And we can say, hey, I can help you in this sector or this sector, and the person helping me has this background. And so for me, it's, I heard Brandon Turner say it once on Bigger Pockets, you know, they have to know, like, and trust you. And whether it's on our podcast, whether it's in our coaching groups, whether it's in my, my brokerage firm, any of those three, I need all of those. And so they all can tie together. And that's something that we're working on and saying, I want you to be able to know that if you're calling and we're giving that advice or that feedback or that education, that there's some sustenance behind it. You know, you can believe in what we're talking about. We're going to make some people mad at some point. You know, somebody's not going to like me. They're probably already there, but you know, I learned all of that from Ricky Carruth. He's an insane real estate agent and coach, and he talked about relationships over transactions. And I learned that when I was like 21, of if we take care of the people, the deals will come. And so I take that same thing into the business brokerage. If I take care of all of the people, more deals will come. Probably half of my listings right now, and I truly mean half, if not more, I'd have to do the numbers, come strictly word of mouth. And then if I got a whiteboard and looked like a conspiracy theorist and drew it all out for you, if you tie that back to, well, who is Daniel? And you can go find, and that's part of the reason I'm looking into the podcast side of things, even though it's not going to be interviewing me, but if you want to go listen to me talk to Jason about something else random, you get to know me at a certain point. That then builds trust. Whether or not you choose to like me is then your decision, but at least at least there's some data to back up that decision. And so, you know, going forward, I think you have to do versions of, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a podcast, but some version. It astounds me the amount of business brokers, even some niched into the FedEx space, that like they have no social media. They have little to no website. And I'm not dogging these guys. Like it works for them. They're doing deals. I think that's awesome. I just don't think in my mind it works out for me long term if people have no clue who we are and they can't find data on us. That like that concerns me.
Yeah.
So
And it's a tough balance, right? Because I joke with people all the time that, you know, we've sold things for millions of years without websites and social media.
Yeah.
But at the same time, now the expectation is different that you have that. And I think your point is accurate. I think what's important, and I've coined this internally and I've been publishing this more and more, is that we're no longer in an information age. Right. Yeah. You could say that we are, but I feel like we've evolved away from the information age into the instant answer age, right? Where now you're watching a show on TV, you know that person looks familiar, you press pause, somebody looks it up, answer solved, you know, problem solved, you move on, right? There's no more unanswered, you know, debates at a restaurant or a bar or a party over a stat or over anything, because everyone just looks it up. So everyone has the expectation of being able to find everything they ever need to know and want to know at their fingertips, which then means, because we're in an instant answer age, no longer an information age, because it used to be information is power. Now it's not anymore. What's powerful is authority and trust.
Yeah.
Like you said, like in Bob Berg put it in the Go Giver years and years ago, which is, you know, all things equal, being equal, people will do business with people they know, like, and trust, in that order. And so that's why what you're saying is so important, and having that online presence. And again, given somebody's given the choice and they're looking at two different brokers, and they find one that's got basically nothing.
Yeah.
And then one that's got a whole bunch of things, and they can form that conversation in their head. They can start listening to a podcast. They get to know them. Then all of a sudden, that's the person they feel like they can trust, and then jump into it. And I, you know, if you've ever had a conversation with a prospective client in any capacity where, you know, they've done some research, and that first call, they're sharing things with you that it's weird they're sharing because it's very deep and personal. Yeah. It's because they trust you, and it's probably based on what they've come to know about you prior to even starting the conversation.
Yeah. And once again, like if somebody else does it completely different and they say, hey, but that's what worked for me, I think that's awesome. Like go do you. It's not, it's not my business. It's not my firm. I can't make a decision anyways, but for me at the age I am and the age my brokerage is at, looking 10, 20, 30 years down the pipeline and saying, what does that look like? I reference him cause I like him, and I kind of like how he's built it all. And he's a Christian. He's got godly principles behind it. But you know, I look at Ramsey and he's like, we just did the radio network kind of for the fun of it. And it kind of got our names out there, but like, we were just kind of fumbling through it. And I look at that and I'm like, yeah, but you could have never anticipated the millions upon millions upon probably billions of views at this point and listeners and things that snowballed into over time. And so I'm like, well, if I get to spend the next 10 or 20 years interviewing business owners and being a sounding board for different industries and different business owners, And somebody else is going to do it. I'm not worried about like, oh, I just gave away a trade secret on Jason's podcast. Like it's already happening. Other people are going to do it. It's completely fine. I'm probably late to the game, if anything. But over the long term, it just builds a foundation for me that I think is good. Like if I was in residential real estate sales, my content for that would be out of this world. I would be the dude who's diving into like the client's pool and you know helping set up their Christmas tree, like all of that stuff, because that's what draws home sales.
Yeah,
business is a little different, but I think it builds a brand far beyond what people can imagine. When it's like, hey, like they think of business brokers and they think of like I freak out half of my clients when they call me, because you'll hear like a cow or a chicken or something in the background of our farm. And, or I'm on a tractor. Like if we're cutting hay, I'll answer them in the tractor and I know they can hear it. So I'm like, hey, I apologize. Like it's in a cab, but you called me, I'm in the hay field. If it's important, I'll stop the tractor, go get in the office, all those things. But it builds this persona around myself of like, I'm just a guy. Like I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a business owner, I'm a sales guy. Most of those tags I'll take, but I'm not the dude who's going to dress up in a 3-piece suit with a tie. I don't own one. I don't want one. and that's going to work for some other guys. Like I couldn't go do what I do up in New York City as casually as I can do it across most of the other states. And that's fine. Yeah. But there's an area where after so long, that doesn't matter as much. And then there's also an area where I don't need that anyways. One of the, some of the first clients I picked up, we were talking about tractors 3 minutes into the conversation, cause they live right by like the headquarters of John Deere. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I don't know how we got onto that topic. but that immediately made him feel like I couldn't have cared less about grabbing his deal and taking his money. I did care very much so about whether or not he had a tractor. Like that's what I wanted to talk about. And then we got to business. It's the same thing as you and I. We're 10 minutes late to this, cause we're talking about, what feels like nonsense, but helps establish like relationship and community there before we even get into business. And I think for me, that's what sales looks like across the board, is like, if you don't like me from our first conversation, I don't know why you would choose me to be your broker. Like you should probably find somebody else, because we're going to spend a lot of time together.
And it's that authentic rapport that you're building, because you're doing it just because, and you're just interested, and topics come up, and then just fun things happen, like in our conversation, right? And humans can detect when that's authentic and real versus like forced. And I'm just trying to build rapport with you. Oh, I see you have a tractor, so I'm going to try to talk about tractors because I'm going to trick you into liking me, even though I don't care or I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And so like people can detect that. And I think you're also right. Like no matter what your business goals are, is what I tell, you know, brokers, and we work with our clients as well, is like, no matter what your goals are, it's still a pretty much infinite amount of business potential out there, which means you don't have to settle or trick people. Like you can find enough people, right? It's 8 billion people on the planet. How many small businesses in the US? How many in your area, niche, region, size you want to do? There's more than enough people. Would they either like that you're calling or you answered while you're, you know, in the tractor in the field, or they don't. And if they don't, to your point, that's okay too. Like then I'm not, like you said, it's a long-term relationship. There's a lot of hours spent on transactions that you're dealing with. That's okay too. Like we're good. Right.
So. Yeah. At least. And I do tell my clients that I'm like, if you're like, there's going to be points in the deal where it gets a little tense and we're going to sound like a couple of siblings going after it. And you know, get a little heated, not because like I had one guy who called me and he just needed this dude just needed to rip on someone for like a good 5 minutes. I drew the short end of the stick. I don't know why, but he went off for a few minutes. And honestly, like after a couple minutes, and I just muted him. I went on about my day. I knew what was coming. The deal was fine. It's just the annoyance of the deal. and he got done and he was like, dude, I'm sorry. Like that shouldn't. And I'm like, it's better me than like your wife. Like I would rather, like I'd rather it be me. And I was like, and you're good. Like I understand the frustration because I have also sold my business and it got insanely intense. And now I'm not saying you have to do that to do what we do, but like I understood it on a personal level. Like that's a lot. And it's fine. You had a bad day. Literally tomorrow is going to be 100 times better. I guarantee it. And we still close, like everything was fine, but having that rapport so that when it does get a little bit hairy and you have to trust, like it was such a hilarious moment at the end of one of the deals we did where the day of closing, they knew I was worth what like we had contracted to be paid and all of this stuff. But the day of closing, it was like the good Lord above blessed me with a cherry on top because we hit a contractual issue. And the buyer threatened, like to take a 10-hour story and make it 10 seconds. The buyer hit a snag, called me, and the first thing he said was, I'm not closing, along with a lot of explicitives. And then explained to me the problem. I very quickly screenshot him, like, all three of the things he questioned. And I was like, it's in black and white and you signed it. There is no, I'm not closing today. Like everyone would come for their pound of flesh. And I shot it to his attorney. And within about 45 minutes, his attorney texts back and said, we're good, we'll close. And it was just one of those moments where like my seller circled back. And I understand it. For half a second, they got super concerned. I wouldn't blame them. They have 3% of the details that don't even matter anyways, because I knew we were justified.
Yeah.
And then all of that obviously comes to light as the day progresses and we sign and everything, you know, fluffs out. But like the next phone call is him. Like, I swear if I was there in person, I think they'd have picked me up and like thrown me on their shoulders and like, you know, done a dance or something. Cause he was like, dude, that was like, you handled that perfectly. And I'm like, that's not all you pay for, but like, that's what you pay for is.
Yeah.
I could have completely messed up there or taken care of you. And you needed to trust that entire time that I was going to take care of you. And it was probably at most a $20,000 issue. And if I had been in the wrong, I would have still taken care of it. It still wouldn't have been their problem, but we're good at our jobs and it happened to work out. And all of that back to like, if from day one, you hated me the way I talk or how I said something, or you know, my pitch to you that I don't really have, hire someone else. Do us both a favor. Like,
yeah,
because we're going to get in the weeds at some point. It's
going to get difficult. There's going to be problems. The deal's going to try to die many times for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's important. Like the know, like, and trust has to be there, just like any relationship. And then, you know, then there's enough of a foundation where it, you know, can sustain the bumps in the road, right? The challenges that come up.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, all that back to like being able to build a kind of a brand or an idea around, like, you're always going to get in the comments and see like somebody doesn't like me. That's fine. But the majority of it being like, I don't mind to say who we are, what we do, how we do, what we represent, all of those things. And I can still lay my head down and go to sleep at night. You know, I think that's fair to the clients just as well to say like, hey, this dude has a social media, like he exists, he answers his phone. I'm probably going to have to return your call 2 or 3 hours later, but like, I'm going to get to you. So that's like brokerage wise, that's where I try and live long-term as we get bigger and bigger, you know, Lord willing, I'll have to, you know, figure out some better systems of operation for larger and larger scale of customer base. But, it, you know, like anything else, there's growing pains in that. So you figure out what helps them out the best that we can still handle on the day to day.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think that's so important. I also think that's a good place for us to stop. I know we still have the marketing tips. We have the deal that got away. The after show. We're going to move all that into the after show because I think this is a good place to pause and we'll pick that all up. I know for people who are interested, so they've listened to all this, said, you know what? I think I do want to talk to Daniel, or I do want to follow him. I do want to check out stuff. All of your links will be in the show notes, but I know they can go to the website, which is nextstep-capital.com. They can find you on LinkedIn, Daniel Brainard, B-R-A-I-N-A-R-D. They can find you on Instagram as well. Again, all the links will be in there. Your email will be in there as well. The link for your course will also be in the show notes. But Daniel, I appreciate you being here. As expected, I knew we were going to fly through some time and cover a lot of things. And I'm excited for the after show. But I appreciate you being here and sharing so much and being so transparent and open about all this stuff as well, which means a lot to me and hopefully valuable to the audience. So thank you for being here.
Dude, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And for everyone tuning in, please make sure to find the after show because we're going to dive into all the stuff that I'm saving to then because of time and just segmenting it, maybe a cliffhanger, make you come then as well. But, you know, I say this a lot. Please make sure to share this. Make sure to like, follow the show, follow people like Daniel. Again, the brokerage world is pretty crazy. It's pretty much unregulated across the board. And so this is all about amplifying the high quality professional brokers out there that are focused on doing the right thing for people and the best things. And kind of like Daniel's advice about giving it a tax return cycle before you start spending the big money. Like that's the kind of thing that I think needs to be out there more than here's the picture of somebody in front of their jet or their car that they leased and that they're probably not going to have for very long. So let's get the high quality content out there, which is why we do this. And just remember, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start filling your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.